rebooted Cardinals fans.
He settles down, at least in the zone, and does not stop running.
Blake Murphy.
This is the identity for the Arizona Cardinals.
The run defense is just horrendous, and it's been horrendous for the Cardinals for a long time.
And Marcos Labrada.
He's going to bring over his philosophy. It should make it better.
Present the hottest NFL podcast from the country's hottest state.
He should be turning around the logo.
Actually, some breaking news we can cover here. This popped up just about, 6 minutes ago.
It's Red Bird Reboot.
Well, let's shift to our film review here real quick, Marcos, going over to talk about the game that we wanted to look at, and I think that you were the one who spearheaded some of this, was Kyler's first game back against the Falcons. Was a impressive effort for the first game coming off of an ACL. A lot of, I think, at least going back and checking that out from what I saw, was not just being impressed with what Trey McBride did, but being able to see Kyler have a lot more comfort in that offense than I think that we had seen previously. So wanted at least to be able to check that out at least for you and take it away as far as for some of your biggest takeaways.
All right. So a lot of what I watched from this game, we're going to cover like each game when he comes back. I'm in the process of being able to get all these throws taken care of, but obviously we see 39 passes here. It's 39 passes. And so watching him back, I was like impressed by some things, but there were some things that still kind of scared me when it came to like Kyler Murray. So it's obvious that they're trying to get him to target the middle of the field more often. So what I am seeing about Kyler Murray is when he does do his drop back, he's kind of like moving in the pocket, like floating to try to get into those windows. And it's either making it so that the throws are like off target or they're late. So when I see those type of throws to myself, I think to myself, okay, like, in this scenario, somebody who obviously can see over the offensive line or somebody that has better vision in that scenario is not moving to move around. Like, it's not panning over to be able to make that throw because they're afraid of having the ball batted down or just not seeing the target overall. So once again, like, I don't know how that can be mitigated. That's why I want Marvin Harrison Jr. as a wide receiver, because that strengthens what Kyler Murray does well. And we see what Kyler Murray does well. So I'm going to go ahead and pick just at random right now, any type of throw. So I'll start with 11 right here. Oh, sorry. That's not the right screen. Let me get my other program that I really like. There we go. Put the camera back up so I can see myself. And let's do this. So let's go. I picked 11. This is just random. I'm just picking at a random. All right. So empty set. Obviously, you have a 2x3 set or 3x2 set. You have Trey McBride at the very bottom.
Marcos, can you go and share your other screen? Looks like it stayed onto just the film lock up here. You should be able to, I think, at least get the right one added in. So thanks for waiting at least those.
What the heck, man? I thought I had the right screen. Sorry about that.
All good. Sharing that window is always the best thing to do. Gotta love live podcasts.
All right, let me know if you see it.
We are all set, sir.
I'm over here explaining some things that you guys can't. Were you able to see like that last? Yeah, I think you were able to see that one. So anyways, so empty set, 3x2. Let me go ahead and rewind. You got one guy outside.
You got two guys kind of lined up near the slot for the most part. And then on the right-hand side, it's an interesting setup where you got Trey McBride. Looks like he's split outside. And then it looks like Rondale Moore, a shade inside. So Trey McBride is not necessarily like in the X spot, but it's basically where he's lining up for the most part, just for how that coverage is set up. It looks like you would say that that would be maybe more the Z for as far as for the play side, I think is looking like it's going to be to that right-hand portion, Marcos.
Yeah, he's the Z because he's off the line of scrimmage. So you have like Michael Wilson, who's on the same side. He's on the line of scrimmage. So you would consider him either being the X in that situation, or you would consider Marquise Hollywood Brown. You always know that because you look at who's lined up at the line of scrimmage. Obviously because of rules, and we all know how those rules can affect teams like the Kansas City Chiefs. Being lined up at the line of scrimmage, you can only have so many people. So let's go ahead and just play this out. By the way, I love how this app that I downloaded, I'm able to like just pause and go in. So he's just at his drop back. I believe this is the tight window throw that he throws to Trey McBride. So they, mm-hmm. they bring him inside. They motion him right before the snap so that he can work outside and come back inside. I believe this is the throw. So, no, this is not the throw. Oh, yeah, man.
This was there the was one where he was. There. Yep. No, this one I do like, at least, like you said, the play call for this one, though, is very fun. You essentially are seeing pre-snap motion. You're able to move at least and get the receiver, and Rondale Moore's got kind of his path to the center. Trey McBride sits kind of down to be able to just kind of pick up a couple of yards for the most part, at least on that play. Kyler, of course, looking at least to the left side all the way.
Yeah, I think it was just trying to target either Michael Wilson over the middle. Yeah, it was. So that's mm-hmm. where the situation happened. So this is where my question mark comes in, because I'm not sure if he was trying to target Trey McBride, who did sit underneath, and that's what they're doing for Kyler Murray in these concepts. They will, for every quarterback in the NFL, they give him like that little, you know, that quick stick route that either is going to get you a 7 or 8 yards or whatnot, but he's sitting underneath that zone, and he's like, pretty much, if he makes that throw in that window that he's supposed to make it through, which is right over here, he has Trey McBride for possibly what, like a 7 yard gain, which is a positive gain. Of course, the sticks are all the way over here, so they need to get deeper into that, and I believe he's trying to target Michael Wilson, so at least he's trying to attempt those throws over the middle. But yeah, you know, we have this situation where, of course, because of that situation with him and his size, he has an obstacle to overcome, and that's like the nose tackle that's like taking on the center in the situation, just putting his hand up there. That's all he needs to do, is just put his hand up there. Whereas, like, that's just something that, like, when it comes to Kyler Murray, we're just going to have to find or figure out ways to work around that, because if you want to succeed in the NFL, you do have to implement the middle of the field. Let's pick up another play. We'll do the 17 pass of the game. Okay, a little bit of play action, just a dump off. So that's a good decision right there. That's what I like. So people don't get excited about these type of throws. You don't need much to be able to convert and move the sticks on this one. This is a good decision by a quarterback. Whatever concepts are being ran down the field, they're meant to be able to sink the coverage. So you have both Michael Wilson and Hollywood Brown, like basically like clearing out this opening to the flat to Rondale Moore at the top of the screen. And now you have him lined up against the linebacker. I'll take that matchup any day. So making that decision right away, understanding that understands leverage. He understands that he has an advantage in that situation. He either makes that decision pre-snap. We'll find out in a second when I pause it again, but I just want to look at the end zone angle right here. Fakes the handoff, looks over to his right side, dumps it off to Rondale Moore, gets a big gain out of that. That's a great decision. That's what you want to look at when you're evaluating the quarterback and their decision-making. It's not always about deep throws down the field. It's not always about the pretty throws. It's about making the right decision. And as you saw, Rondale Moore is lined up in the backfield. So great decision right there. Let's go ahead and let me go ahead and pause it.
I think his eyes right there, if you want to go back real quick and look at where his eyes are, if you hit play for that spot, the one at least that I find interesting is, like you said, Rondale in the backfield. He fakes it, looks to see immediately, and he can see that you've got two guys running downfield with three. He's using his eyes to hold the linebacker, number 53, right there in the middle of the field. And knowing this concept, Rondale just flips around, at least reading it, to make sure he's got everyone there available on the sideline. Great decision, ultimately, because if one of those guys had come down onto Rondale, then you know you're able to at least just read, take that deep shot. Seeing how Kyler's worked in different levels, I think, has been one of the biggest areas that I saw in this new offense right away versus the Cliff Kingsbury offense. You would see a lot of times it'd be like the running four verts. You're basically going to get a one-on-one matchup. You're predetermining the matchup. Here we get to see him kind of read high to low. He ends up holding 53 for a second and then is able to quickly dump off to pick up that first down plus some yards after catch.
Yeah, because you do know that the linebacker does know that there's two concepts being run behind him. So one of the things that I don't like about running play action from the shotgun is that these linebackers do not come down for that. They don't respect that. Look at the fake handoff. He just makes that quick read. He's not even paying attention to the running back. He's just already looking at the flat. But Kyler Murray is looking, what I presume is either at him or trying to hold him there with his eyes to be able to say, look, I'm going to target somewhere around you. Oh, look at that. Got a wide open Rondale Moore on the flat. Good luck trying to tackle him in space.
Yeah, no, it's a great way of isolating, at least not just Rondale Moore, and showing where by holding him in that spot. This is, again, like part of coverages will be, if you're a linebacker, sometimes when you're reading, Your goal is to be able to get in the way of the quarterback, to be able to make sure that you can make it as hard as possible to complete that throw. Like, you're going to be standing there on underneath coverage, quarterback throws it over at linebacker who dropped back, just jump up, tip the ball, intercept it. There's all sorts of possibilities that are there. That's one of those plays where you can at least say it's a good play design, and part of where the NFL with these two safety looks are, it's taking away those deep passing lanes. So you're going to have to be willing to kind of dink and dunk down the field. And that's where things with how the defense is constructed, at least here, your quarterback has to be able to make a good read very quickly. And that's exactly what Kyler did on that play.
Absolutely. Yeah, great decision once again. So you have him in the shotgun again right here. Single back formation. You have Hollywood Brown at the top of the screen. You have two wide receivers at the bottom. So you have a three by, no, this is a four by one. You have an attached tight end at the end of that. Let's see how this plays out over here. Big handoff. I thought this was going to be the gorgeous throw that he had. I believe he was trying to target Rondell Moore on this one.
Yeah.
On the kind of like the, how should I say, like not really the dig route, but like the, like you see Rondell Moore at the bottom of the screen right there. I think he's trying to either target him, but he's looking downfield. And I believe, let's go back over here. Look at this part of the screen. Okay, so fakes the handoff. Rondell Moore runs that over route. He's wide open over here. You can say he's wide open. I think he's looking at Hollywood Brown, I believe. I don't know what you would get from this, but you have two wide receivers that are coming open, and you have Hollywood Brown, who I don't know if you can make that throw to him because of the safety that could possibly come down. What's your take on this one? Because this one's hard for me to read because I clearly can't see what he's trying to target here.
Yeah, this looks like great coverage by the Falcons, honestly. Like, they basically, and sometimes that's where you have to be able to give it up to a defense where they set up the play action fake for the most part to Keontae Ingram. They actually get the pocket to move a little bit for the most part, where they move Kyler to the right, and then the idea is to throw back to the left. You're probably trying to hit that receiver in the middle of the field or with a Michael Wilson. Kyler ends up running out of time on the play. One of the areas that I think with the Cardinals, and you want to look at least, is they do a great job of being able to pick up, at least with, if you look at Jeff Swain, look at how the pass rush at least is set up. They do a solid job of being able to kind of give him a pocket. He scrambles a little bit here at the end. But the coverage downfield is so good that it would kind of lead to what you'd call a coverage sack. Like, there's not really a place to go through. This is one of those deep shots where if you're a quarterback, sometimes you got to be able to, you know, if you force a ball on there, that's going to be a picked off for an interception. You can't do that. I do think that the Falcons, and we've seen kind of this throughout some of their game, one of their players in Timmy Horn this last year did a really good job of being able to at least affect Kyler's throwing lanes by being able to get his hand in the air. I think that's one of the places that we've seen when you have a shorter quarterback, part of the passing game has to be able to function off of having that under center play action, having some bootlegs. We've also been able to see here in this spot, you're obviously looking at the player that you'd want to get the ball to, I think, in this situation is pretty easily Rondale Moore. However, the way that if you're Kyler reading some of this spot, at least, is he's probably looking to see if he can get Hollywood Brown on the top side of that passing lane. Maybe we've seen Kyler be an aggressive quarterback. The fact of the matter is that the linebacker is able to kind of cover up that space very quickly. You see how he flips his hips around number 55. When Rondale is kind of taking that spot, you'd want to see Rondale with his speed be able to get open. Instead, you see a combination of the linebacker takes a great angle. Kyler ends up having a little bit of pressure up at the front. And so then you're really going to be talking about the best thing that comes open late is going to be Michael Wilson. Because Rondale, at least that's the first spot you'd go to. The second spot you'd probably go to would be Wilson on that passing concept, throwing over the middle of the field. And by that point, you end up where Kyler, he doesn't have the capacity to step into that throw. Maybe you could argue that he could just be able to move his feet a little bit, wait for Wilson to be able to clear. This is one of those places where ultimately you would love to see, is there a guy that you would trust in a one-on-one type of matchup against this form of zone coverage? And what we've seen, at least with Kyler, if there's one thing I can say about him as a quarterback, it's that we saw him previously, when you'd play man coverage, he would just beat you with the likes of DeAndre Hopkins, being able to get to the ball, even to an AJ Green. When teams have dropped back into this zone coverage and can still get pressure by running three or four guys, that's why so many NFL DCs are running this style of defense. You have to be able to find ways to build it. I think that in one of these different places, if you have the trust of a guy who can come up and be able to beat your man on one-on-one, and also, the other thing I'd say about this play, Marcos, and this is something we've seen throughout the season, who's missing from this play? You've got Michael Wilson, Hollywood Brown, Rondale Moore, Jeff Swaim, even is the guy who's tight end. Who's missing in this play? And the answer is a guy who I think you would trust to beat that one-on-one coverage, Trey McBride. And that's one of the cases, I think, to be made for bringing in a wide receiver one that would be able to beat that guy, where Kyler's not having to make a throw backwards across his body to a smaller framed Rondale Moore. We saw when they went to Trey McBride in this game and you were able to trust him, he was able to kind of come down with the game-winning catch, even on what was an underthrown ball. That's one of the places where what I've argued for the Cardinals is you can get some pass protection. I think you got to improve some of that. Obviously, there's going to be some room with the shorter quarterback, but this is one of those cases where we've seen it all the time with a guy like Mahomes or with other running quarterbacks. When you're able to run and throw that ball to a guy who's able to get open or be able to take that ball away, like a Travis Kelce or an A.J. Brown, we saw it with him and DeAndre Hopkins as well.
Well, he creates his own – like, he gives himself space on this pocket. He moves the pocket, quote-unquote, because that's one of the things that I wanted to see from a mobile quarterback was being able to move the pocket. So he has all that space to be able to make that throw. And one of the things that I've constantly been watching about Kyler Murray is that, like, once he gets his feet set, he's a little bit indecisive of who's going to go throw. He has to make a commitment here, right? Here's where the throw
needs to be made. Still having to read that offense, at least. That's still new to him, yeah.
So if he can throw that ball to the corner where only Rondale can make it, he has the opening there. This is a tight window throw. I don't think that's a smart decision. Unfortunately, like, once again, like, he runs out of time. I think he does that pointing thing to try to pretty much say, like, hey, I'm hitting you, so make sure you get wide open. He's probably thinking about getting Hollywood to come down over here, but then he watches as AJ Terrell closes in on that because he has the deep third, and he watches Hollywood Brown running that deep post route, that pseudo like go route over here. But the concept that they run here is like a flood concept slash like a pseudo dagger at the bottom of the screen. These are meant to be able to attack one side of the field. So, of course, like, the decision needs to be made here. It wasn't made. They closed in the pocket. Kyler Murray has to bail. And right here, I would love to see him just get rid of the ball, like, because most of the time he tries to maximize all his throws. But I don't want to see him make that decision and then have it, luckily for us, DB miss the ball and drop the interception. So I would say, like, he needs to get more into the whole mindset that, like, the play's lost, the play's lost. Don't make a bad decision with it.
And which down is this also, Marcos? I do want to make sure that we see the context for that, because this is a long first down to be able to get also, if you go back to the beginning. This is the Cardinals having to take a shot. Because they are very far back, at least. You can see at least where they took place. This is part of what I believe coming out of the half. Arizona's offense just kind of stumbled a little bit and allowed the Falcons to get back into the game. And that's where you took the concept, you took the shot, and that's one of the cases that we've seen with this Cardinals team is when you're on schedule and able to run the ball effectively versus when you're just kind of having to try to make things go through. Let's do one more play at least before we kind of get into the last part with our mock draft.
Absolutely. Let's go ahead into our last place. So actually, I'm going to let you choose. So out of 1 through 39, what pass do you want me to choose?
I honestly, at this point with the Falcons Cardinals, I think we should take a look at least here with one of the things with Trey McBride at the very end of the game. I think seeing that concept as one of the highlights, I think, for Cardinals fans for the most part, to be able to line them up to get that game winning field goal. And I believe that's as far as the play by play goes, that it would be
that's where he gets the first down.
Yeah, it'd be the one with the getting the first down. That was the one where Kyler ran for the first down. I know that the final play, at least for the most part, was actually going to be, this is the 33-yard play. So this is play number 39, you said?
Yeah, 39. This is it. This is the big time throw to Trey McBride.
There it is. All right, let's break this one down here.
I love this. I love how he goes down. He trusts his tight end over here because, like, after coming back for one game, he knows he has a very, like, he has trust in this target. And this is where I started getting not only excited for Trey McBride, because I was such a, like, big Trey McBride fan when we drafted him. I thought to myself, oh boy, if we can develop this guy's going to be special. And I mean, he goes to him. He knows he has the one-on-one against a defensive back. That's a mismatch. And when you know that a quarterback understands that, like, a tight end is going to be a mismatch for a defensive back, you can't put a linebacker on him because he's too quick for him. Can't put a defensive back on him because look what he's going to do. He's just going to get him out of the way. He's going to track the ball. He knows the ball's coming to him. He slows down for that. That's what I constantly say about, like, somebody like Hollywood Brown, where if Hollywood Brown's in that position, he's not fighting through contact. If you see Trey McBride keeps his eye on the ball, tracks it, stays with it. It's not even like something you have to high point. You just have to come back to it and make that adjustment. That was awesome. So let's go back to the beginning of it.
Yeah. I've seen some people say if that was pass interference, but you also look at him trying to come back to the ball and the cornerback is not looking back over there. A lot of times what happens is with receivers, and this is kind of one of the areas of how pass interference can be left up to where refs are. The refs are going to basically want guys to be able to go and make a play on the ball. And so you can see he's got a step here for the most part. The ball is underthrown. He works his way back to the ball and is able to make that catch. That's one of those places where you're not going to throw a flag, especially because it's not like it's an underthrow and then the corner stopped him from getting back to the ball. This is just a play where the cornerback is just not able to kind of come through with being able to make a play. Doesn't see where the ball is in the air. I believe the cornerback in this spot, unless I'm mistaken, is number 20. Is that number 27? Richie Grant, I think it is. From looking at the... Yeah, it's Richie Grant. Like you said, one of the places of seeing how the Cardinals came out last year, we saw late in their game plan, it was run the ball with James Conner, throw the ball to Trey McBride, kind of mix in some of the smaller receivers because that was really what they had to work with. It's very easy to be able to see what Kyler does with a bigger receiver here in this spot, and it's a nice concept that kind of puts with the game on the line. You were in a, I believe this was a 2nd and 7. You're at Atlanta's 42. This is one of those places where you've got enough time left for the most part where the Cardinals, if they pick up a first down, you can at least have a shot. You can kick it. You don't get that play, you may not be able to actually. You're going to be then looking at 3rd and 7. You've got to go for it on 4th down. You're probably way too far to be able to kick it with Matt Prater from that point. So you're kind of in a got to have it sort of down situation and for sure got to have it on the next down. And you're able to see the two come through with this, which is the puts Trey McBride over that 100-yard limit. Puts Trey McBride into the Cardinals being able to have that first 100-plus yard receiving game from a tight end in who knows how long, probably longer than I've been alive, I would say. And really feels like it was one of those places where you can see some of the future of the Cardinals of being able to run the ball effectively, take what the defense gives you, and then taking some of these big shots when the game is all set and ready to be won. You're getting those passes in.
One thing I want to add is this is, looks like a cover one man coverage, and the deep safety shaded towards the field side, I believe. Yeah, it's kind of the field side because he's closer to these hash marks. So that's the reason why he didn't go up, because you have two go routes going up, like two post routes, or corner routes, actually, I believe. So you have Hollywood Brown running from the slot, Trey McBride running from the slot. They're both running like corner routes here. So they're going to fake inside, come back outside. He goes to Hollywood Brown because he pre-snap, he determines that this safety shaded towards Hollywood Brown because they believe that that's the guy they need to stop. And he goes the total opposite way. That's the reason why that safety wasn't able to undercut. So it's a good thing to be able to understand that.
Yep. Great read by Kyler. Holds the one safety on the one side of the field. They actually run Trey McBride long side, which I don't think a lot of people, I wouldn't say not expected it, but you can at least see that they figure out what the mismatch is. He very quickly knows that's going to be his guy to go to. And McBride, for what it's worth, gets that step. It's part of investing in an early, more athletic tight end for the most part and what that can do for you as a Arizona Cardinals player. Now, let's go ahead and shift into the last part, at least, of our show. We're going to be going over just with kind of a mid-combine mock. Thanks again, at least, for that film breakdown. Let's take a look at least here. So I've already done at least a little bit of the work. Let's say that the round at least shakes out like this. You get Caleb Williams going number one overall. Drake May goes at number two. I think currently I would flip May and I would flip him. I think that Jaden Daniels, when you talk about the Cliff Kingsbury style of offense with the deep throws, with being able to make use of the run game, working out of the shotgun, I think a lot of what you'd want to see for Drake May would be some of that deep play action off of center, being able to at least use his legs in that regard. Whereas Jaden Daniels is probably one of the better runners we've seen since Kyler and Lamar Jackson. I think that that would shake out to be the first three picks, which, of course, I think left Marvin Harrison Jr. for the Arizona Cardinals there. I think you could say that we're still starving for Marvin is how that would work out for the most part. There's at least with how this mock draft shakes out, there's a couple of picks that I do also like in here, Marcos. I do like Brock Bowers as a tight end going at pick number 7. It's interesting seeing Quinyon Mitchell go all the way up at least to the Falcons at number 8. We're not seeing, I think, at least the top quarterback in J.J. McCarthy go as high as I believe he will. Talese Fuaga is the guy who a lot of teams seem to be super high on. He here is the first tackle taken. I think that he more likely would be the second offensive tackle, maybe even the third. But for some people, he's leafed up high enough. Brock Bowers going as another receiver to number 7. I could see that very easily being the case. It'll be interesting to find out. You also get Byron Murphy is moved up there. Sorry, is pick 12 with the Broncos taking him. His athleticism, it seems like he could end up being one of the first defensive tackles taken. And the first edge off the board, Dallas Turner, followed by Laitu Latu, who his health records will be interesting. Jared Verse after that. We'll see what goes on with Kool-Aid McKinstry. I do think there's a chance he could fall to the second round with the Cardinals. Maybe the lack of, and this is a decent corner class, but really, the biggest case of that you can make is for the offensive tackles. Another few go right here with Amarius Mims goes in the 20s to the Dolphins. You see Grant Barton go through Troy Fatanu. You also see Peyton Wilson. I think that this Marcos is going to be fascinating. He's probably in most drafts would be your number one inside linebacker. When you watch him play, he looks like a Luke Kuechly out there. His past shoulder surgery injury and some of the other places means that he could end up going as early as sometime on day one or day two. I don't think he goes first round, even if that is kind of the traits that he's blown up the combine, obviously. I think it'd be more likely somewhere around day or day two at like the earliest. I think that you may see a team take him day 4, or maybe he ends up falling all the way as a 7th round pick with those medicals. But unfortunately for Cardinals fans, right after that, you already see Jaxon Powers-Johnson, the top setter, goes off of the board to the Eagles in replacing Jason Kelce. Yep, JPJ. You then have, of course, this is a great tackle class, and unfortunately for the Arizona Cardinals, they fly off the board. JC Latham, Amarius Mims. He's a huge human being. I call him Amarius Hims just because he is just that type of a bit raw, but he would be like your type of prototypical right tackle. Graham Barton from Duke, Troy Fatanu, at least off of Washington goes. You now have the Arizona Cardinals on the clock at pick 27. Troy Franklin goes to the Buccaneers. You got a couple of great options here. So you've got at this spot, Johnny Newton. You've got a safety in Tyler Newbin. We talked a little bit about what the Cardinals would have with Buda Baker. I do not see them taking a safety at this spot. They're hoping, I think, that one of the top cornerbacks could fall to them. Here it would be Ennis Rakestraw Jr. maybe would be one of those. I just think that when you're taking a look at this, what immediately stands out to me is the tackle spot, offensive and defensive. Johnny Newton's one of my top three defensive tackles in this class. I think that you could make an argument that he could be the top overall tackle up there with Byron Murphy. You could also sell me on another type of tackle, at least in, there's another defensive tackle who's going to be pretty high. 366-pounder Devondre Sweat, I think the other guy from Texas. You could argue that he could be another one up there. Tyler Guyton, a guy from Oklahoma, Kyler Murray's alma mater, where he won the Heisman's up there. Zach Frazier, a guy who could be a center or a offensive interior lineman. What are some of your thoughts based on who's available? You also have a couple of trade options. You could move back a few picks with the Detroit Lions would be one spot. New Orleans Saints, you would have to trade a ways back for the most part here. What I think would be interesting would be if the Lions are offering you, their next pick is at pick 29. Could you move back two spots for the most part for the 92nd overall pick, Marcos? Do you think that would be something that'd be worthwhile for the Cardinals, or do you want to stick and pick and draft a player here in this scenario?
Well, none of these people are really jumping like off the screen when it comes to, and that's how it is in the draft. Like your top guys are going to be gone early. So can I afford to move back? Yeah, I can afford to move back. I mean, we all know that that's like going to be something that Monty Osafort's going to do. He's going to entertain the phones. He's going to listen to offers. He's just going to try to, you know, hit this with numbers and whatnot. And you still got to develop the picks and, you know, have them play out and stuff. So it's not just like, hey, I got more picks, that's great. But it's only two spots back for an extra pick. So I'd go ahead and trade back in this situation.
Yeah, I would agree. I think if you're the Lions, I could see them in this spot moving up, because right now there's been, and I don't think it'll be like this on draft day, there have been only three quarterbacks taken. Here they would be moving up for another guy who falls. And, you know, maybe we've seen draft day falls happen before where sometimes there's a quarterback four who slides down enough, a team is able to trade up at least. I think that you would definitely see this as being a solid option. Right here, you can see at least with Tyler Newbin. And then Tyler Guyton comes off of the board. So if you're looking at a left tackle for the Arizona Cardinals, he does go at least to Buffalo, one pick there in this scenario from PFF's mock draft simulator. I think at this spot, honestly, Marcos, you take Johnny Newton right here and you recognize that now you've at least got a stud defensive tackle who's able to stand there in the middle of the field. He does have some pass rushing upside at least as well. I think it's pretty easy now to be able to say you can take him. Now, what's cool is I also am looking at this spot and saying, all right, you've got a pick coming up in 35. You've got a couple of other teams that are up here for the most part. I would draft Johnny Newton, and then the Cardinals in this spot are going to be probably being able to look at a potential trade up. So in this spot, I would look at, if you're the Cardinals, you can see at least how the rest of the first round went. You've got Chris Braswell goes at pick 32 to the Chiefs. I would see if you could trade up and get that fifth year option in. Now you're at least talking about at least getting in an edge rusher. In this case, we're not going to be making trades for the most part. You've got Ennis Rakestraw Jr. You've got Zach Frazier. You got TJ Tampa. You also have a couple of interesting options here now at the Cardinals. You've got a Jordan Morgan, who a lot of people have wondered, could he be that left tackle you'd want to line him up as? His arms are a bit shorter. We know the Cardinals have talked to them, have an interest in him. You also have a couple of edge rushers here. You've got Chop Robinson and Darius Robinson still on the board. Chop Robinson, I believe, is one of those guys who, with the combine, just had a very solid being able to get that rush in. You have Kamari Lassiter, had a blazing three cone at the combine. I believe that's Kwame Lassiter's kid needing for a cornerback. And you're also talking about, of course, you still need that left tackle. Do you want to go ahead and focus on the offensive side of the ball? Are you taking maybe an edge rusher to go with that? Or are you trying to focus at least on filling that cornerback spot? What are some of your thoughts here from the talent available, Marcos?
Well, once you told me that Jordan Morgan was a short arm type of a player in the NFL, those type of people are called guards. So if you're comfortable with trying to take a guard and possibly moving him to the left, like, you know, to as left guard, that would probably be the only option I would go for. But I don't know. I don't feel comfortable about playing him in tackle, because if you have a short arm tackle, you lose advantages against these long armed edge rushers. So I wouldn't be comfortable about putting him in tackle, now that I know that little bit of information. So,
Let's take a look here. What we have for some of those. We've got the Tennessee Titans, at least, are looking to potentially trade. The Atlanta Falcons, if you want to jump back a little ways, for the most part, the Dallas Cowboys. I think it'd be interesting to see what we would have. Can we get another pick, at least, for the most part, with a fourth rounder, with how that stacks up? We've got pick number 38 and 35. We are going to look at the Cardinals. Let's say that they give back, you know, move up a little bit for the most part. Let's say they give up pick 222, move back three or so spots, and let's see what we get. The Titans are actually going to move up. They take Rakestraw, Frazier, have an edge rusher. So here at this spot, we're talking about, what do we have here? We've got Kamari Lassiter, Chop Robinson, Darius Robinson. I don't feel like that the Cardinals have a number one edge rusher. I think that looking at this here, if you're going to talk about who is one of the top guys that you could get, that would be one of the players that I would look at for the most part. So you got Chop Robinson. He runs in the 4.4s, which is insane. 250, 6.3. That's basically, imagine Marcus Golden size with the athleticism of like a wide receiver. So you're talking about very athletic play. Obviously, Penn State is just known for some of those freak athletes. And then Darius Robinson. This is a guy who overall at 296 at about 6'5", he's one of those kind of prototypical 4-3 edge rushers. In this spot, Marcos, I'm thinking of Hassan Reddick. This is a guy who maximized his potential with Jonathan Gannon a little bit on the smaller size. I would go ahead and take the likes of Chop Robinson here for the most part to find the Cardinals.
I agree.
And at least get that edge rusher in. So now you've got at least two guys on the defensive line. You've got a bit of a pass rush. You got a bit of a run stopping. Let's go back now and look here at pick 66 for the Arizona Cardinals. Again, no trades are taking place in this mock draft. To me, this is pretty easy to look at a combination of skills. Kalen Bullock is there. Jalen McMillan's there. I don't think you need to look at a wide receiver. Maybe you could look at a defensive lineman again. There's one player that really stands out for me here, and it's Blake Fisher, the Notre Dame tackle. I think that he's one of those guys that 6'6", 312 is prototypical size, prototypical strength. I think that the one thing with Blake Fisher is that he does seem like he is going to be a natural athlete, at least who's strong. I don't know if he's going to last this long into round three. I think he may be one of those round two offensive tackles in a good offensive tackle draft. To me, I bet this is would be my plan. You couldn't get one of the top first round tackles at 27. They just didn't fall. You traded back and you couldn't get one with Tyler Guyton. You're like, okay, we'll go on the defensive side. Cardinals have plenty of defensive needs. I think you take Blake Fisher here. You have a veteran offensive tackle, put him in kind of groom him to be the left tackle or the right tackle of the future. Do you have any issues with taking a Blake Fisher here, or is there any other prospects you see that you would feel pretty strongly about? If the Cardinals do end up trading Buda Baker, you're getting a pick. Maybe a Kalen Bullock isn't too bad of an option to take here, but I think you could address this left tackle spot long term with the likes of Fisher.
This is where I like to try to dabble with like tackles and whatnot in the second and the third round. So I have no like. I'm not protesting that pick at all. I think that's a great pick in the third round, especially if he has the upside of being like the starting left tackle for us, or at least a starting tackle for us, whatever they decide to do with Paris, if they keep him at right or they move him to left, which, I mean, it all depends on how this guy gets developed. But yeah, I think this is a great pick.
Oh, it looks like it took Johnny Wilson instead on the actual mock draft simulator, but it's all right. We know that we'll have Blake Fisher there at the end. So now we get to this is pick 71. The Cardinals in this scenario have six picks in like the first 90. It's just crazy how I think there's five picks in the first 90, six in the first 120, which is just a lot of draft capital. This is kind of a curious spot for the most part. As we said, this is a top wide receiver draft. You've got guys like Devontae Walker still here. Austin Booker is an edge rusher. You've also got Xavier Leggett, who is a lot smaller. He weighed in the 160s. He's going to be a lot closer, honestly, to a Hollywood Brown. Actually, no, Leggett's the one who's the bigger X type of receiver, 6'3". I was thinking at least of, there's a different lineman, a different wide receiver who went much earlier in the draft receiver. I was thinking of, give me a quick second here, not Adonai Mitchell, but the other one, who I believe was from Texas. Sorry, folks, it'll come to me here in just a second. Xavier Worthy, that's who it was. Xavier Worthy, much smaller guy. Do you think that it's worth taking a second receiver? You've already spent draft capital on Michael Wilson. He seems like he'll be able to be your overall wide receiver two. I don't think you necessarily need to get a big slot. I honestly would be looking around in this range if you wanted to add a second tight end, if you wanted to add at least a player of safety. The one player that really stands out to me here now that we've drafted a tackle is going to be Jeremiah Trotter Jr. stands out to me quite a bit here. You could go with another defensive lineman, but really, I would much rather say we need to invest and get a guy who either can take over long-term for there's only 1 year left of the deal for Mr. Kaiser White. And you also can see at least there's a halfback here. There's a couple of places. This may be where a running back could start to go for the Arizona Cardinals. Some guys that are still on the board, obviously, are Jalen Wright, Blake Corum. Some of the guys afterwards are a little bit smaller. What are some of your thoughts, at least, Marcos, here on what the Cardinals should do? Because I'm looking at that linebacker spot. I'm also looking at the need for a cornerback, looking at some of the guards who are available. And right now, it feels like in a lot of different ways, the other guy that stands out to me here, and I've got another pick coming up, not until pick number 90. If you're talking about wanting to really invest in your defense or your offense, if you want to be balanced, I think there's two players I would look at here. One, Jeremiah Trotter Jr., who is another Clemson linebacker, but unlike Isaiah Simmons, I think he actually is a true linebacker. He's a little smaller at 6'2", 230. He does at least remind me a lot of Kaiser White. He's a pretty good aggressive player. The other player here that I think would maybe be my pick is Christian Mahogany. So we passed earlier in the draft on a offensive interior lineman. We did get a tackle. He's a kind of a, one of those plug-and-play sort of guards that you can look at in that third round, 6'3", 322. A bit on the older side at 23, but he's going to be at least, you know, 24 by the end of his rookie season, so it's not like he's too old. Do you feel like the Cardinals should go toward addressing that linebacker starting position, getting a guy next to Kaiser White, or would you kind of maybe risk it a little bit, see if Mahogany falls, and or like even a Cedric Van Praan on the interior? What would be your choice, Marcos, in this situation?
I would just go with Jeremiah Trotter. He's a smaller linebacker. I'm looking at his measurables. He's 6 foot, 228. That's completely fine in today's NFL. 31 and a half inch arm length and stuff. He's a pretty undersized like linebacker, but I was mostly trying to see if I could pull up his 40 time to see if he's one of the faster linebackers, because you do have to take somebody that you believe is going to be a starter for the next upcoming decade and whatnot. And being that his dad, once again, we're looking at lineage and whatnot. His dad was also a linebacker, so him himself playing that inside linebacker position and going with the defense and whatnot, I would hope to see that there's a good possibility that he might carry on those traits. So yeah, I would go with Jeremiah Trotter here and hope that he takes on that spot and becomes a starter. It needs to be a starter right off the bat. Let's not play around with this guy. We don't have Vance Joseph anymore, so we don't have to worry about him coming off the bench.
Yeah, I think with Jeremiah Trotter also, he did have a 7 second three cone at least with for that size in the most part. A lot of linebackers these days are much more coverage linebackers. I agree with you that it'd be nice to have a 240 pounder who could just stand in the middle and be able to take guys on. It's just really hard to find those levels of athletes these days. Let's go ahead and grab him and see how things shake out, at least as far as falling. Now, again, we see Christian Mahogany goes off, Devondre Sweat goes. We have the Cardinals back on the clock now. We've got a guard in Mason McCormick. You've got a safety in Sione Vaki. The guy that really stands out to me here, honestly, Marcos, there's two of them. One, do you feel like Cedric Van Praan is that guy who, could he take over long-term and be an upgrade at center from a guy who's a gritty, more undersized player here? Now, this is Van Praan, a 6'4", 310. Some people talked about him as the top center in the class. He's fallen down. You've got Michael Hall Jr., another solid defensive lineman. It seems like there's always a third rounder who goes from Ohio State who ends up being pretty good. Hall's 6'2", 280. That would be getting you another kind of guy who could be defensive inside or outside. Here's what I will say. I know that we've already talked about the other cornerback from Mizzou who went much earlier in the NFL draft, especially in this draft. And there is another one. And Chris Abrams-Drain, who is actually, in my opinion, might be a bit better. He's at 5'11", 178, a little bit bigger size. I think that he's got the ability to play as an outside corner. He may not be your cornerback one, but if you can find a cornerback two or three, pair that with a guy that you already drafted last year with the Arizona Cardinals, at least in, I believe it was the, out of Syracuse. We're talking about... let me find this here real quick. Garrett Williams, obviously. Yeah, so you already took Garrett Williams. You have Keetrell Clark as another guy who obviously you had some hopes on that he could be able to either be a backup or come in for the four spot. I would take Chris Abrams-Drain right here and recognize that you at least have a cornerback who's able to hold up, be a corner two or three for you. What are some of your thoughts, at least, Marcos, on where the Cardinals are in? Even with the board and how it has fallen, we've kind of seen at least some of those guys, at least who we'd hope like a Mahogany that would be on the board, just kind of came off of it just before the Cardinals picked. Same with the Devondre Sweat. Even the, one of the top running backs in Jalen Wright and Blake Corum have gone off the board here.
Well, obviously the talent is starting to like have a drop off here. Chris Abrams is interesting as a like cornerback too. Obviously, I'm not a fan of the size
Yeah, he's not like your 6 foot like corner, very lightweight at 175,
5'11". Just trying to get as much as you can. And like, yeah, but like, I would take a flyer on him and whatnot, and have him. You know, you do need to start supplementing that talent with the cornerbacks in that room to be able to like at least, you know, get some development going and whatnot. So I would go with Chris Abrams at this point. Yes.
Yeah, let's go with that, especially because like you said, after this, I do think that the cornerback rooms, if you're taking a look at here, after Jarvis Brownlee Jr., it's going to have a drop off for the most part. They got Andrew Phillips. I like some pieces with Cam Hart, but obviously, you know, we've seen Kalen King. No one's seen his stock go from first round to second round to probably day three pick, just because of, despite being at a great place for athletes at Penn State. I'll take Abrams Drain here, and let's get down to, we're back at pick 92 on the clock. This one's pretty fun, honestly, to me. I don't think you need to go ahead and take a running back this early. You've got some good options on the board here, at least. I think you wait for the next pick for the most part. One of the guys that I like in this spot here would probably be Van Pronde. You've got an interior offensive lineman. We know we've already at least gotten an offensive tackle in this spot. We've gotten a linebacker. We're addressing plenty of needs for the Cardinals. I would love to say that we could either get him or get another defensive lineman here in Hall Jr. What would your thoughts be on this, Marcos?
I would probably go with maybe just Michael Hall Jr. in this situation, because we got to start supplementing that defensive line like a group. Yeah. But Cedric Van Pran is also very interesting. What would you say in this situation? Would you rather go and bolster the offensive line or try to bolster the defensive line?
Yeah, I think in this spot, if you're set on your center for a year, then maybe you could argue, okay, we draft him, but unless Vin Prom's going to plug into left guard, I bet the Cardinals will sign a veteran left guard. Adding a young talent on the defensive line, I think, would be my goal here, because then you can keep that rotation going. Jonathan Gannon said he would not see one defensive lineman play 65 snaps a game, probably not going to see a defensive lineman play more than 65% of the snaps in a game. I'd take Michael Hall here all the way to the bank. You're now going to be dropping ways down for the most part past some of these guys here to look at. I'm going to go ahead real quick past this spot. Here's where I'm at pick 105. I like Cade Stover a lot out of Ohio State. We've already seen the Cardinals kind of invest quite a bit with Ohio State players here, starting with Marvin Harrison Jr. You've got also a couple of halfbacks. Leonard Taylor's seen his stock go from kind of late first round, early second down a little bit. To me, if you're talking about building the Cardinals overall, I would, and this is something we know about the Cardinals, what we've heard is that they're probably going to be looking at a veteran free agent to bring in, obviously to torn ACL for tight end too. Adding another guy in Cade Stover, who I think is a good willing blocker, is able to be showing up all over in their run game. I would take him here without a hesitation, knowing that as a Cardinals fan, you're going to want to be able to recognize the importance of Trey McBride, but also recognize the importance of having these two tight ends. And if Trey McBride goes down, having that option, I would go ahead and just take Cade Stover here in this scenario.
I agree that I would, I definitely would. Like I said, we're getting to the bottom round. So now it's like, hey, we got to snatch up everything for value wise.
Oh, yeah. All right. So now you got a couple guys left. You got another corner in Cam Hart. I don't think that we've got probably three or four corners, at least there with the Cardinals. We've got a couple of guys. There's Audric Estime is interesting. He had us 4.740, but at 5'11", 227, he's a big guy. James Conner, I believe in his combine, ran somewhere in the 4.6s. You've got Leonard Taylor, another. We've already kind of gotten, I think, some of our defensive linemen. You've got a guy in Ray Davis, who overall is probably just kind of an okay back. He's just a little bit shorter at 5'10". This is a spot where what I'm looking at here is I think that the Cardinals, you've got a number one running back in James Conner. You've got a number two running back, I think, that's popped up for the most part, not just with Amari DiMercato, but with Michael Carter II coming over. I think you'd be looking for more of a long-term option to replace James Conner. I think that getting another back with burst is probably not as favorable here. I think you look at some of the other players, even with like a Cam Hart, who does measure in at 6'2", 207. He's one of those guys who maybe is a bit more stiff, but he's a cornerback with size. I think that there's two areas that I would go here. One is I would take a look either at a Braylon Allen. I don't think I would draft a quarterback here at all with one of these spots. He's going to be a guy who's 6'2", 245 with burst like a James Conner. Or you could take a look here at a guy in Cam Hart with that cornerback spot. I think we should go ahead here and take Cam Hart with our final pick. Would probably be at least finally addressing and getting a corner with size. Or do you think the Cardinals should draft that big running back to replace James Conner in a year, get some extra boost to the offensive side?
I like the corner because we do need some cornerback with like some size at the at the very least. And let's not forget that like Tariq Woolen went in the fifth round with the size and speed and whatnot. So we need something to work with as far as a cornerback room to be able to be like somewhat of that Antonio Hamilton, like either like a replacement and or just somebody that's going to play under him, because Antonio Hamilton has been our most consistent cornerback. And he's a cornerback with size.
Yeah. So here we have one of our final kind of mock draft that we built up here before. As far as the Cardinals are concerned, I think we did a really good job. You got Marvin Harrison Jr. You got Jerry Newton. You've got Chop Robinson. Obviously, the one that was clicked on incorrectly, at least as far as Johnny Wilson, instead of that we do have for the let me make sure I take a look at the full results here to make sure I know who we actually drafted. After Chop Robinson, we went and got, I believe it was Blake Fisher, actually, of Notre Dame. Jeremiah Trotter Jr. was, of course, the cornerback that we, linebacker that we took after that. And then as far as the last piece of draft, we also ended up taking, let me go here. There we go. For the Cardinals, we also grabbed Chris Abrams-Drain here, the line cornerback. Got Michael Hall Jr., at least defensive lineman, Cade Stover to help that backup tight end. And Cam Hart, who I think is going to go a lot earlier, at least, than some of this because of that size-speed combo, ran a 4.5 40. That's it for us. We'll come back at least talking a little bit more about the combine and a free agency preview next week. Marcos, if you want to shout out where our listeners can find you, either for your writing or work on the X Machine.
You can find me at Pancake Soul, and of course, you can find me on AZ Sports Underground.
Absolutely, and I'm at Blake Murphy 7.